yourself a song to sing and sing it till you're done. Yes, sing it hard and sing it well. Send the robber barons straight to hell. The greedy thieves who came around and ate the flesh of everything they found. Whose crimes have gone unpunished now. Walk the streets a screaming now. And everyone get it down.
Greetings, all you 99 percenters. This is your host, Dr. Jack Rasmus, Alternative Visions. Okay, the topic today, we're going to revisit Obamacare. We had a show here back in early July, and before that, I had been talking about this and forewarning 6-8 months ago that Obamacare is in trouble. And going so far as even to suggest that this thing may implode by 2016. So this is the third show that we're having on this topic. And as my guest, I have back Margaret Flowers, who was with us before, very informed healthcare professional, a doctor, and very active in the Medicare for All movement. As I've been saying many times, the only solution here is Medicare for all. And if we at least had the public option, none of the gaming going on by insurance companies and businesses would be possible. We'll talk about some of those gaming of the systems. Okay. Main reasons why Obamacare may not survive. One. It's not really a health care bill, folks. It's a health insurance subsidy bill. It's all about getting the health insurance companies to buy in to a scheme that is more in the tradition of Clinton's health maintenance accounts and Bush's health savings accounts, i.e. privatization. This is about privatization. It's not really about health care. Okay, it's about moving the money around from working class and middle class folks who are earning $40,000 or more a year, and the companies they work for, and unions who have decent plans, moving the money around from those folks to subsidize the health insurance companies to pay for coverage for the 50 million plus people who can't afford it anymore, because the health insurance companies and hospital chains have been gouging everybody for almost 20 years now. The problem is runaway health care costs, and the ACA, Obamacare, does not address that at all. These runaway health care costs began, little history here, and then we'll get to our discussion with Margaret. Little history, right? The problem begins in the early 1990s, with runaway health care costs. Remember way back in 1992, Hillary Clinton tried to establish a national health insurance, not a Medicare kind of solution, but health insurance, and they were slapped down by the health insurance lobby and the hospital chains. Biggest lobbying campaign up to that time was launched by these folks, the companies, and they defeated the health insurance bill, Hillary Clinton's bill. So what did the Clintons do? Well, they introduced what the Republicans and the health insurance companies were proposing, and it's called health maintenance organizations, or managed health care. And what was managed health care all about? Managed health care was about allowing the health insurance companies to grow bigger and to deepen their connection with Wall Street so they could engage in financing mergers and acquisitions of each other. They were exempted from antitrust so they could buy each other up. They had to borrow money from Wall Street. Wall Street says, well, you know, up to now you're paying out 95 cents of every dollar in actual health care services. You can't do that anymore if you want to borrow money from us, Wall Street. We want to see a 20-25% return on our money if you want to borrow from us to buy up your competitors. That's really what health maintenance was all about, and that's what happened. And once we got that connection, we got tax cuts for them to help them finance it, and the connections with Wall Street deepened, and the health insurance companies start dropping people off who were actually using the insurance and preventing people from coming on who actually needed the insurance and hiking up their rates to pay Wall Street for the loans. And, of course, what they did after that was just pass it on to everybody else, businesses and employees alike. And we still had 50 million uninsured by the end of the Clinton administration. And then Bill Clinton, of course, redefined what it meant to be uninsured and knocked 5 million people off. And then we had 45 million overnight redefining it. Well, he did that redefining poverty as well, knocked 5 people off the rolls. That's one way to achieve an objective, just redefine it. Okay, we got double-digit costs, healthcare costs after that. Throughout the 2000s and after, George W. Bush encouraged it. And what was George W. Bush's solution? Clinton's was managed health care, which allowed them to merge and buy each other up and raise prices, pass it on. Well, Bush's solution was, again, to privatize it, a different form of privatization called the health savings accounts. Oh, in other words, go out and buy your own insurance, folks, if you can't afford it. Or even if you have insurance, go out and buy cheaper insurance with higher deductibles and less coverage because the cost for the good insurance is rising so fast. And then a lot of companies, smaller companies in particular, started dropping insurance coverage for their employees because it was too expensive. So HSAs were designed for folks who really needed it to go out and buy and pay for their own. Of course, they had to pay through the nose and they got really subpar coverage. But it was something, health savings accounts. You know, that was the same way they destroyed defined benefit pensions, but 401ks. HSAs were just an analog to 401ks in the healthcare side. Okay. And it's all about shifting the cost burden, whether it's managed care or HSAs, to the patient. Right? Trade cost control for self-rationing. That's what these things were about. Now, Obama's ACA is in this tradition. It's all about privatizing health care, insurance coverage, right? But it's got a little twist. You see, what Obama's doing is saying, well, we're going to help accelerate the privatization by providing some subsidies for those who are uninsured. And, of course, the subsidies are not just for the uninsured. The subsidies are for the insurance companies, too. All right? And we're going to move the money around from working class and middle class folks making $40,000 a year above and union folks with good plans and businesses and so forth. We're going to move the money around. It's going to, through various means, it's going to come back through the government, and the federal government's going to divvy out subsidies to get people to who can't afford it to sign up and to subsidize the health insurance companies and to subsidize the businesses. So they're taking money from the working class and middle class and divvying it around in the form of subsidies. Except the subsidies aren't going to work. We're already beginning to see that. Right? And then they have a few penalties that they're going to, you know, the carrot and stick thing. They're going to slap some penalties both on businesses and individuals if they don't sign up. Okay. It's all about moving the money around in all kind of different ways if you look at that bill. Now, the problem is that the penalties for not signing up are insufficient. And the subsidies that are going to be given to those who want to sign up who don't have insurance now, the subsidies are inadequate. The penalties, of course, levied on business and levied on individuals are insufficient, but even the insufficient penalties, business can avoid and game and get around. We'll see how they're doing that. And the subsidies for the working poor are inadequate in terms of the magnitude of the subsidy, but even more important, there's a cash flow problem here. What do I mean by cash flow problem? Well, the problem is this. If I'm making $20,000 a year and I don't have insurance, maybe I even want insurance, right? Okay, for me to sign up to get this insurance, it's going to cost me anywhere from $100 to $300 a month. Can I afford that, making $20,000 a year? No, I can't. Oh, but the government's going to give you subsidies. Yes, but the problem is the government will give you subsidies when you file your taxes. Well, that's a year later. In the meantime, I can't afford $200, $300. I'm eating hamburger helper now, and if I have kids and so forth, there's no way I can afford $200, $300. There's no month-to-month subsidy payment in this system. There's an end-of-the-year tax deduction payment. And people just can't afford it. Right? The subsidies are inadequate in terms of the timing and in terms of the amount, and the penalties are even too low to begin with for individuals, and certainly too low for companies, and even the low penalties by companies can be gamed and moved around. The problem is this thing is integrated with the tax system, you see. You pay your penalties in tax filings. Business, of course, can offset and manipulate its taxes. Right? And we're seeing now businesses with 50 to 100 workers are already gaming the system and shifting to part-time employees, because part-time employees, people working 30 hours or less a week, are exempt. Businesses don't have to provide insurance for those part-time employees. And you know, if you look at what's happening with the job market this year, we're hiring an extremely high percentage of part-time workers. In the first 6 months of the year, 950,000 people were hired, but over 600,000 were part-time and temp workers. And that's continuing. If you look at the numbers for the job numbers, you know, the big increases are occurring in industries like retail, right, and leisure and hospitality, restaurants and so forth. This is all part-time employment, but that's where all the growth is. Well, they're already doing that, businesses. They're already gaming that in anticipation of the law being rolled out here. So business can offset their penalties by manipulating their taxes. They can offset it if they're a small business by shifting to part-time employment, and that's already occurring. All kind of surveys show that clearly. But, you know, the penalty of $2,000 per year per worker if they don't sign up, well, that's cheaper than what business would probably pay in monthly premiums. And there's all kinds of surveys showing that they plan to rather pay the penalty than sign up their employees. Now, for individuals, there's a penalty, too. But look, the first-year penalty is only $95. If I'm a young worker making $20,000 a year, and boy, we have tens of millions of these folks, unfortunately, working part-time, if I'm got to sign up at $95 a year, well, look, pay $200 a month or $95 a year penalty, well, I'm going to pay the penalty. Now, the penalty rises to $325 in the second year, but even that may not be sufficient. It's not until the third year when you get about $600. But that's by 2015-16. That's too late. This program will get the deep six by then. So the penalties are insufficient on both businesses and on individuals, and the subsidies are insufficient and inadequate, and the timing for the subsidy payments, you get it back in your taxes, is totally inadequate. Okay, that's the big problem with this thing working. People are going to figure that out. They're already figuring that out. Business has figured it out before the rollout here, and workers are figuring that out now as well. And they're not signing up. Business is already gaming the system, has been for some time, both insurance companies and non-insurance companies. We know this part-time manipulation game, right? Obama, by the way, has exempted larger businesses for a whole year. He's given them an exemption. You don't have to even start considering this to 2015. Now, he hasn't given a similar delay to individuals. Individuals may have the penalty, but business, big businesses won't. And then we have the healthcare companies, health insurance companies, who are really gaming this thing. You know, it's in the news here, right? Dropping the old coverage. They're sandbagging Obama. He didn't see it coming, or he trusted them. Right? What are they doing, right, in dropping the coverage? Okay, they say, well, we got to drop it because we got to add more elements to our coverage than we had before. And that's true. But you know what? By adding new elements to people who already have coverage, the costs are going up. They're dropping their old coverage of folks who had it, and, okay, here's your new plan, and it's going to cost you twice as much. I can speak individually from that. I can speak about family members, young folks, who were paying 13 months ago $87 a month for bare bones, $4,000 a year deductible coverage. That went up to $107. In other words, a 23% increase this year in anticipation. Mm-hmm. And then they got a notice that said, okay, we're canceling your old service, your old coverage, and your new one's going to cost $213 a month. $213. So people who had coverage are being canceled, and they're told, okay, the new coverage is going to cost you twice as much. And by the way, the deductible now is $5,300, not $4,000 a year. Okay, I got to pay twice as much. With a higher deductible, well, no wonder people are hopping mad. Couldn't they figure this out? Well, that's what happens when you trust corporations, when you trust management. They're so clever. They'll give you with one hand and take twice away with the other hand. Anybody who's been in union negotiations knows that's what it's all about. You got to watch them. So what we got now is more high deductible plans. If you want to keep your costs down to where they were, $107 a month, well, you got to get even more high deductibles and even less coverage. And why should young folks have to pay that, have to face that? I'm young. I mean, people up to 30 years old, you know? Okay, so, you know, people figure these things out. They're not stupid. Right. Also, another problem is these big insurers are on the sidelines. Who's signing up in these, who's participating in terms of insurance companies in these exchanges? I'll tell you who's participating. It's the new startup and small insurance companies. The big guys, Aetnas and so forth, Blue Shield, they're sitting on the sidelines waiting to see what happens. Now, on top of that, Obama... You know, the ACA is a deep six plan for union-negotiated health plans. By 2018, as part of the moving our money around, these plans, union-negotiated plans, will implode because there's going to be a 40% penalty on the continuation of these plans that already cost about $2,000 a month in premiums, these union plans. Yes, $2,000 a month, usually half paid by the employer and half paid by the employee to get decent health care coverage. Well, that's going to raise in 1 year 40%. Well, employers who have union negotiated plans are already manipulating the game, telling their unions and employees that, look, you know, any of these cost increases between now and 2018, you guys are going to eat it all. I'm talking about 75% of all union negotiated plans. They're passing it all on to the workers in the meantime, and they're raising the heat, putting the pressure on. Oh, you want to continue maintain your benefits? Well, you have to give up even more wages if you want to continue it between now and then. And then, of course, it explodes with the 40% penalty in 2018. That's what's going on there. Now, the unions have complained to Obama saying, hey, you know, the employers are taking advantage of this, and, you know, you ought to let our some of our union members, particularly in plans where the workers aren't making very much, like in the restaurant industry or retail industry, you know, let us participate in the subsidies, because if you've got a union plan, you can't get government subsidies. And they're saying, hey, you know, our members are working poor. They're only making $20,000-$25,000 a year in many cases. So, gee, we should be able to participate. And they went to Obama, and Obama said, buzz off. No. Well, you know, this the real goal is to dismantle union-negotiated health care plans by 2018 or before, which is all part of this privatize the total system. ACA, Obamacare, is George Bush health savings accounts on steroids. It's the destruction of any form of collective health care plans. Union deductibles will go from current $100 to $200 a year to $500, $2,000 a year. Copays will go up, coverage will go down, and so forth. Now, another problem with this thing is 25 states still refuse to participate in Medicaid. Now, Medicaid workers are signing up, Medicaid folks are signing up because they got nothing. They are signing up, and they don't have to pay the penalties. Okay, so how is the ACA program paying for the increase in Medicaid? Well, 3.7% tax on the wealthy. That's how they're paying for Medicaid expansion. You know, for health insurance, the private side, the non-Medicaid side of this, they're moving their money around. But for paying for how do they finance the Medicaid side, they're taxing the rich. That's good. Okay, they can certainly afford it. This is where the Tea Party opposition comes from, folks. You know, it's the rich don't want to pay the 3.7%. They don't say that, but that's what it's all about. Okay, this is for the non-working poor coverage, you see. That's the Medicaid side of this. And there's no problem there. You know, they're signing up, even though 25 states are refusing to participate. Folks are signing up fine there. Well, how can they sign up fine there, and there's so much trouble with the online sign-up for the insured side of all of this? I mean, couldn't the government figure out, well, let's just replicate the system that we got on the Medicaid side and get people signed up? Okay. Again, ACA. The Obamacare is all about moving the money around, and as you move it around, pass it through the insurance corporations so they can skim off big profits and then pass some of it on to the working poor and those unable to work poor, those on Medicaid. In the meantime, big profits go to insurance companies. Hey, have you looked at their stock prices recently? If they were really paying part of the cost, they, in other words, insurance companies, their stock prices would be lagging. Ah, they're going through the roof. They're on a tear. Why? And what are these big insurers planning to do? Well, what they're doing now, unlike in the 90s when they were borrowing from Wall Street to buy each other up, they're on a global buying binge. They're buying up health insurance companies around the world. This is what this is about. This is a new way to fund multinational health care monopolies, insurance monopolies. Okay, to summarize then, and we'll move on, about ACA, working poor can't afford the cash flow delay here. They can't wait to get a tax deduction to pay for out-of-pocket every month that they don't have, so they won't sign up. Young workers can't afford this time gap either, because they're mostly among those that are earning less than $35,000 a year, just starting out their work lives. Penalties on individuals are too low for the first 2 years. Business is too easily able to avoid its share of penalties. They're exempted, big business, small business is maneuvering the part-time deal, right? And the penalties are just too low. $2,000 per employee per year. You know? The result is enrollment is not going to happen. They expected 7 million people to enroll here in this coming year. What's enrollment after the first month or 6 weeks? Federal enrollment, they say, is about 50,000. That's all. In those states where federal exchange exists, in the states where the states have their own exchange, maybe 100,000, maybe. So we got about 150,000, right? So we're going to have to get 7 million enrolled in the first year, we're going to have 600,000 to 700,000 people enroll every month for the rest of the year. Now, you think that's going to happen? I don't. And the Democrats in Congress are covering their ass, you know, running around in circles, running to Obama and saying, "Say this thing's not working, what you going to do?" Even Bill Clinton comes out. Typical of Clinton. Makes a statement about, "Oh, well, you know, Obama, you should make good on your pledge that no one's going to have to change their existing insurance." Clinton knows that's not possible. But he wants to make himself look good. Clinton, you know, the great opportunist. Enrollment will continue to lag. There'll be more delays, more exemptions. You know, already we have not just this one-year postponement for big business. We have Obama unilaterally took out long-term nursing home care this year. Don't have to provide it. They took out subsidies to teaching hospitals. Right? They've already rescinded the provision that said we can import prescription drugs. They took that back out. And now we got a new offensive by the companies, health insurance companies, saying, well, gee, you know, we're going to have to, if enrollment is so low, we're going to have to keep paying for the uninsured coming to emergency rooms and so forth. And, you know, you were going to take that away, but now these folks aren't signing up, so that's still going to be a fee for us. Obama, you have to lift and pay us $20 billion here for the next 2 years for what looks like an emergency care. Okay? All right. That's the picture. That's the picture. Now, I want to make it darn clear to everybody. I'm criticizing this thing from the progressive side. This isn't a Tea Party critique. This is a left progressive critique. This thing would never work for all the reasons I've said, and the only solution was Medicare for All from the very beginning, or at least a public option. In other words, where the government would have its own insurance program as an interim step to Medicare for All. But both of those, well, first of all, Medicare for All wasn't even allowed to be discussed in this whole thing, and the public option was pulled off the table unilaterally by Obama with nothing in exchange. Just imagine, if you had the public option, could these insurance companies be gaming this system the way they are now? No, they couldn't, because the government would say, okay, go ahead, we'll just offer something cheaper. And people would flock to the government insurance plan. You wouldn't have this problem with rollout. You know, you wouldn't have this problem with all these exemptions and government and business gaming this thing. It would be so simple, so easy. You'd be overwhelmed with people signing up for the public option. But now you think you're going to be able to pull the public option back? Well, the right wing, the Ryans and so forth, the Tea Party, are going to take this thing into the midterm elections and take this thing in the 2016 elections. You know what they want? They want vouchers. They want full, immediate privatization, not only for those who are working, but for all the retirees as well. Let's kill Medicare in the process with vouchers. This is the reality of what's going on here. Okay, we're going to take a break, and I want to come back to my guest, who is an expert on this question of why we need Medicare for All. Margaret Flowers. Thank you, Margaret, for being so patient. I just had to get all this off my chest here and tell folks what's really going on. And we will come back after a short break, and I'm going to let Margaret tell us why the public option and Medicare for All is the only solution from the very beginning and still is the only solution. This is Alternative Visions. Be back in a minute. This is Jack Rasmus, Alternative Visions, and the topic is the Obamacare rollout and status to date. And my guess is Margaret Flowers. Margaret really needs no introduction. If there's anybody who really knows what's going on this topic, it's Margaret. And she's been writing quite a bit, and I would suggest she give you some references for her latest publications on this topic and her latest talks, et cetera. Please do, Margaret. And Margaret, as you do that, pick up where I left off and, you know, comment on anything I had to say and take it from there and explain to folks why Medicare for All is the only solution to this crisis.
Sure. Well, thank you for having me on, Jack. I enjoyed listening to your recap. That was really excellent way of summarizing the Affordable Care Act. People can find all of my writing on my media website, which is called clearingthefogradio.org. Clearing the Fog. Fog stands for Forces of Greed. So clearingthefogradio.org. And if you search my name in healthcare, those articles will come up. So I think you really nailed it with the Affordable Care Act. Is what this is doing is it's actually further privatizing all of our health care, further consolidating all of our health care in the hands of big corporations. So not only are we seeing, you know, more people being forced into purchasing the private insurances and our public dollars being used to subsidize the purchase of those insurances, and in addition to that, hundreds of millions of dollars that are being spent to hire people to market health insurance, you know, to go out and knock on doors of people that are uninsured and get them to buy private insurance. It just boggles my mind. But we're seeing privatization of our public insurances as well. And that's very concerning to me because I put this in kind of the framework of our kind of typical neoliberal economic policy that defunds our public programs and privatizes them. And so right now, in terms of Medicaid, 75% of Medicaid enrollees are in managed care organizations, MCOs. These are privately administered plans which take off money for profit, which means less money for care. They also compete with each other by trying to dump people that actually have illnesses or require care. They do this by providing poorer service to them, which incentivizes people to leave that plan and go to another one. So Medicaid is being privatized. WellPoint, which is one of the big insurers that played a big role in writing the Affordable Care Act, bought the largest Medicaid administrator, Amerigroup. So that kind of tells you which way the wind is going on that. I'm sure they expect to make a lot of profit off of those Medicaid dollars. And then Medicare itself is also going in the wrong direction. President Obama had said that he was going to cut back on the Medicare Advantage plans. These are private insurance plans that are sold through Medicare, and they tend to, the data shows that they attract the healthiest patients. They spend more than traditional Medicare, and so again, they're just kind of taking dollars out of our public health care system for their profits, their increased administration, and that takes away from how much money can be spent on care. So we've seen a 30% increase in Medicare Advantage since 2010 instead of it declining. So, and then we're seeing, there was just a report that came out yesterday by Deloitte showing that the rate of consolidation of our healthcare providers in these large private corporations is actually accelerating. And we're seeing, you know, private insurance companies are actually starting to buy up providers. So this is a very concerning trend because this is exactly the opposite direction, as you know, from where we should be going. If we had actually gone to a Medicare for All system from the get-go, at this point, everybody would be covered. We'd be controlling our health care costs and our health outcomes would be improving. As an economist, I would love it. I don't know if you can add all of this up, but I'm looking at, you know, the billions of dollars that are being spent to set up the insurance exchanges. And then the hundreds of billions that are going to be spent subsidizing the private insurance, and then regulation of these plans, overseeing in the IRS whether people have signed up for insurance or not, the putting together the new websites, hiring people to sell these insurance plans. How much money do you think is actually being spent on things that have actually nothing to do with health care?
Yes, that's a very good question, and certainly worth an investigation. And I suspect what you would find is it's really transferring the marketing costs from these companies to the government.
Right.
Which
and imagine what it would be
profits,
like.
Even more profits for the health insurers, because now much of the marketing will be done.
Exactly. And imagine what it would be like if we actually took that money and used it to provide health services. What is so unacceptable is that we live in a country where people actually need health care. We have a huge health care crisis. We have, you know, 80 million people last year that didn't get the health care they needed because of the cost. 4 million families over the last 2 years that went into bankruptcy trying to pay their medical bills. So it's amazing that we have such a great need, and yet we're spending all this money to try to coerce people into buying private health insurance when our experience is, when we're sick, that health insurance in this country doesn't work.
The market profit system doesn't work, so let's concoct new ways to force people into the market profit system. That's kind
exactly.
of summarizes it. You know, but that's the whole neoliberal strategy, right? So, you know, the markets, it's like the environmental problem, right? Do a cap and trade. In other words, pay people for polluting, and that's the solution for people who are people, corporations, well, they think they're
right.
people, who are polluting, right?
Right.
And people buy into it.
Exactly. So that's why I think we have to really get beyond, and you did a great job of that, you know, get beyond kind of all of this media hype, which is never going to really be about the real issues. You know, the corporate media is just really used to distract people from the real conversations we should be having, which is why shows like yours is so great. But what this boils down to fundamentally is, do we want to live in a country where we treat healthcare as a commodity so that people are only able to get the amount of healthcare that they can afford? Or do we want to join the rest of the civilized world and say that healthcare is actually a public good, something that everybody needs, and create a system that treats it like a public good? And that's where Medicare for All comes in, because almost 50 years ago when Medicare was passed, they were able to enroll 20 million seniors using index cards, I think within 6 to 9 months.
Yeah, interesting. Index cards, right.
Yes. This was before computers. And we're already spending enough money in the country right now to provide high-quality health care to every person for their life, their whole life.
Yeah,
it's not a matter of money.
Here's a statistic for folks who are listening. The U.S. spends, what, 18-19% of its GDP on health care of various kinds, 18-19%, $3 trillion, okay? Now, if you look at those countries that have some form of national health care, let's take France or just about the rest of the world, they spend about 10% of their GDP on health care. Okay, we spend almost twice that. Well, who's getting the other 9%? I mean, if the 10% is really paid to health care direct providers, right? We should be paying 10% of GDP to healthcare direct providers, but we're paying 18-19%. You know what? The other 8 or 9% of our GDP is going to insurance companies and paper pushers and middlemen who don't provide one iota of healthcare service in this country. You know, what's 1%? I mean, the 10% of GDP, folks? You know, you're talking about almost $2 trillion. Going to these insurance companies and other middlemen who don't provide any health care insurance. We can't afford to do that. No country can afford to do that. But we're doing it. In other words, it's all about sucking money out of average folks' paychecks and funneling it onto corporations. That's what it's all about.
Absolutely. And the other piece of a Medicare for All, besides the administrative savings, you know, we would, you know, when you have one system and one set of rules that's handling the payment, they're not They're not making decisions about your care. They're just handling the financial transactions, and the government is very good at that. You're talking about less than 5% of the total health care costs would go to administration, but the other piece of that that it would allow is that the United States pays the most for pharmaceuticals and for health services, because we don't have a system that actually, we don't have a rational system of determining what those prices should be. We don't negotiate for fair prices. So when you have a single-payer system or a Medicare for all, it creates what's called a monopsony, a single purchaser, and it gives us tremendous bargaining power.
Right, right. Well, you know, a good example of that is the 2005 prescription drug bill passed by George W. Bush, costing $500 billion so far. Over $50 billion. You know why it costs so much? Because there's no tax to pay for it. George Bush said, we're going to pay for this totally out of the deficit. Right? We're going to make the general taxpayer pay for this. And or, you know, we're going to get the money recycled from China, and we're going to pay for this and pay for our wars and so on and so forth by deficit spending. And part of the bill was that no controls whatsoever on prescription drug prices. And in fact, you can't even negotiate with these drug companies. States can't even negotiate, right? And it's illegal for us to go to Canada and get the same drug at one-tenth the price made by the same company's subsidiary. In other words, they can have free trade, but we can't have free trade. Yeah, exactly. You're exactly right. I mean, the prescription drug thing is the, you know, the most bizarre transfer payment to drug companies in the world.
Right, and that's, you know, in a country where the vast majority of our research is done in public universities. So this is, you know, public information that is then being used by these pharmaceutical corporations to make tremendous profits. And another thing about, when you have a single-payer Medicare for All system is that, you know, people always say, oh, it's going to hurt innovation. But the type of innovation that we're seeing in this country is that pharmaceutical corporations, medical device companies are just trying to figure out what they can make quickly, patent, and make a profit off of. So the majority of our new drugs are actually just taking current drugs, tweaking the chemical structure a little bit, giving them a new name, and then, patenting them and then marketing them. They don't have to prove that they're any better than what we currently have. And the same thing with new technology. It doesn't have to be better than what we currently have. So if you had a single-payer system and you have a single purchaser, that system can say, okay, these are what we've identified as our top health problems in this country that have not been solved. And so we will pay for research that will solve these problems. And so it creates the type of innovation that is actually based on need rather than just, you know, what a company easily can get away with and profit.
Yeah, well, that's the problem with a market-driven healthcare system, right? It's whatever produces profit, not what produces health.
Right. And I urge your listeners to also understand the whole concept of health insurance plans as actually being, they're actually products. The insurance companies treat them as products, just like a TV on the shelf or a cell phone. And they, you know, if they don't make a profit off of a particular plan, they're just going to pull that plan off the shelf. We saw this back in September of 2010 when there was a provision that kicked in the law that said that insurance companies could no longer deny new policies to children with pre-existing conditions. And so just as that law was ready to kick in, a number of the major insurance companies stopped selling policies to children.
Mm-hmm.
So the Department of Health, you know, they just pulled them from the shelf. The Department of Health and Human Services had to negotiate with them, and they said, okay, if we let you charge more, if we let you only sell them during these narrow windows of time, will you sell them again? So, you know, this runs counter to everything that we need. We need a system that actually is about health. We don't need an insurance company to manage the money. They just take money off the top that doesn't go to care in that case. And we need a system that actually, in addition to driving innovation, what we find in these types of national public systems is that they also drive our policy. So many of the unhealthy, entities that are out there, I mean, we see high fructose corn syrup and everything. We have poor public transportation systems. We have, you know, tremendous amounts of pollution. all of those have health costs to our population. And so if you had a public system, it would start to drive policy to say, hey, we could actually save a lot of money if we didn't pollute, or if we took these things out of our foods, or if we made healthier foods affordable and more available. So it would really, really shift our whole approach to health in this country.
Well, the biggest lobbyist industry by expenses, lobbying expenses, is the healthcare industry and the insurance industry. They're the biggest lobbyists, you know.
Right.
And folks should think about this. If they, since Clinton, if the insurance companies, health insurance companies, are making 22% returns dictated by Wall Street for their loans to buy up their competitors, now they're doing it, as you say, and as I say, globally as well. Do you really think this whole ACA arrangement will result in less than 20-25% rate of return? No. Or they would never agree to it. You know, if it wasn't more profitable for them, they would never agree to it, folks. It's that simple. And this is one of the great parasite industries. You know, there's like four great parasitical industries in this country. One of them is the health insurance industry and healthcare industry. The other is the banks, right? Big parasites, the banks. The other is oil and energy and the drug companies. You can imagine what would happen to the standard of living in this country if we took the profit out of just those four industries, where they would have to charge lower prices, take the profit out, nationalize the SOBs, right? You know, we would have alternative energy now. We wouldn't have to be destroying our entire water table across the country with shale gas drilling. You know, they say, oh, it's getting less CO2. Well, there's more methane with the greenhouse gases from this thing going on, but it's going to destroy the water table. We're trading air quality, not so much air quality, for destroying our water quality. Right. Okay, so we should be solar, wind, it should be all alternative energy, but you'll never get that with a private energy, private oil and energy industry. You would only get that with a nationalized energy industry that would say, hey, it's cheaper, more economical, and everybody would pay far less if we had alternative energy. And the same thing with banking. If we had a public banking system where we took the profit out of banking for consumer loans and business loans, small business loans and mortgages and so forth, you know, people would save tremendous amount of money, and the same with health care and drugs. I mean, the standard of living would go up 20% overnight. People would be able to buy things, other things now, and we'd have a recovery three times what we got now. It's that simple. Nationalize these four parasitical industries, and you raise the standard of living by 20% in this country. But, of course, it's all about, and the politicians are all about, figuring out how to keep the market system going and the profits of these folks at the expense of everybody else. Hey, when you think about Medicare, think about it. 1.45% is what you're paying for Medicare for, what, 45 million people, a tax of less than 1.5%, another 1.5%, okay, the companies pay. Okay, so 3% tax. You know how much my family pays for our health insurance? We're paying over $25,000 a year just in premiums, the employer and us. $25,000, that's 25% of our income, as opposed to 3%. Come on, folks, 3%, 25% to get the same kind of health care coverage, it's a no-brainer. And, you know, that's why they won't allow discussion of Medicare in these solutions.
Absolutely. And I think if you put that in the context of the new income data that shows that 40% of our population is making less than $25,000, I think 50% is making less than $30,000, people simply won't be able to afford health care under this system. And that's one of the big reasons that the ACA is going to fail, is because it's not going to control health care costs. And so people may be forced to pay premiums for health insurance, but then they're not going to have the money to pay the out-of-pocket costs up front to get the care that they need. And a Medicare for All system is completely the opposite of that. It's paid for through a progressive taxation. And when you need to get health care, you just go to the facility. You don't pay a copay or deductible. You get the care that you need. It's not based on the care that you can afford. It's based on the care that you need. And it would be very simple because we wouldn't even need to have people necessarily enroll. We have the Social Security data, so we know where everybody is. If we started Medicare for All today and you hadn't gotten your card yet, if you went to a health facility, the first thing they would ask you is, what is your problem? And then they could finish the paperwork later on to make sure that you got your card. But there would be no barrier to getting care.
Yes, that rollout comparison is very dramatic, isn't it? I mean, it's not even an issue signing up for Medicare. And as you pointed out, millions signed up almost overnight by means of index cards back in the 1960s. Right.
We saw this in Taiwan in the mid-1990s. That was the newest country to take on a single-payer system. And it was the same kind of thing where they had, you know, initial planning period, and then they rolled it out overnight. And the next day, people, if they needed care, they could go to a facility and get care.
Yeah, this rollout is just a red herring. This is not the real issue. The real issue is enrollment, and that translates into a real issue of, what are we getting for our money, right? You're not getting very much here. And if you're middle class, a working class, over $40,000 a year, you're subsidizing. You see, this whole ACA is an indication of the further crisis of Medicare in the market system in this country. Because under Clinton, you could engage in managed health care and health savings accounts under Bush, where they're just trying to get people to privatize individually. But now, in order to get people to privatize, they got to take money from some folks to give it to other folks. And, of course, as I said, giving to other folks passes through this big skimming machine where the health insurance companies take the lion's share and the rest dribbles out to folks at the other end, right? It's a transfer from working class one section to another section of the working class going through the great sifting machine, which is the health insurance and drug companies.
Absolutely. And I think we need to bust one other myth in the few minutes that we have left is that, they created these so-called marketplaces because they thought people wanted their choice of health insurance. What we actually find is that people want their choice of where they go for care and what kind of treatment they get. And the studies show that the majority of people don't actually understand insurance. They don't understand what the deductibles are, the co-pays, co-insurance, all these types of things, what they actually mean. In addition to that, a new study, and it's on the PNHP website, pnhp.org, showed that a person cannot identify which plan is best for them unless you know what your illness is going to be, because they looked at the cost, you know, if you had a particular illness, which plan was the most cost effective, and they found that the different plans were, you know, different plans were effective for different illnesses. Mm-hmm. But people aren't going to be able to figure that out up front.
Mm-hmm. Well, why should they have to figure out, which plan and this and that, you know, under Medicare for All, you're covered, right? You don't have to figure that out.
Exactly. And you don't have to worry about medical bankruptcy, and you don't have to worry about being able to pay, you know, upfront costs before you can get your care. It's just it's definitely the solution. I mean, the United States has really been an experiment in market-based healthcare for the past 40 years, and there's no doubt about the outcomes. You know, we have the most expensive care. We leave the most people out. We get very poor health outcomes for the money that we spend. And so it's not an experiment. Moving to a Medicare for All system is actually following what has been time-tested and proven works if you want to create a healthcare system that's based on health. So it's why we have to not get confused by the Affordable Care Act, not get distracted by these, you know, discussion about the exchanges and the computer glitches. We need to be organizing to build that demand for a Medicare for All system, and the sooner, the better.
Yes, and let me emphasize that, to begin organizing for Medicare for All. Why? Because if ACA implodes in whole or part, and I think it will be at least in part, maybe in whole, right, what's coming from the right is total, immediate privatization, voucher system.
Right.
They're waiting
right
in the wings, and if we don't have Medicare for All movement, they will make it even worse. We will go from the frying pan of ACA, Obamacare, into the fire of the right-wing voucher total privatization plan. And we better start organizing now in anticipation that this thing is not going to work, that neither the Democrats nor the Republicans have a solution because they are both bought and paid for by the big corporations, all of them, and revolving doors and all the rest. And what we need, as I've been saying, is a new grassroots party that is not in the pockets of business. That has to happen. And then we got to take this money out of politics. Okay. Thanks for listening. I hope you learned something. Thank you, Margaret, so much once again. This is Alternative Visions. Jack Rasmus. Talk to you next week.